Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Hi, it's Dan from Desert Island Dicks. Wow, I've completely lost my voice. I didn't realise because I haven't spoke in a couple of hours, but I just had a coughing fit, and now I'm recording this intro, I've realised I can't speak, which might be an issue because I'm doing a live Desert Island Dicks in 2 days' time. But look, before we get onto the details of that, this show features comedian Lauren Patterson, and we had a lovely chat about all the people and things that would make her time on a desert island a shitty experience. She was a great guest. You might notice in the background there's some funny noises at some point. That's because she had a little dog that was playing around in the background. So if you hear any sort of scuffling funny noises in the background, that's her dog. But I don't think it detracted from anything. In fact, for dog enthusiasts, maybe you'll find the sound particularly homely. I don't know. Now, as I mentioned before, in a couple of days, I mean, because I'm publishing this on Tuesday night, we are doing Desert Island Dicks Live as part of the Cheerful Earful Podcast Festival. So Thursday the 6th of October, we will be in the Bedford Pub in Balham, southwest London, and our guest is John Robbins. You know John Robbins, he's done loads of stuff, podcasts, broadcasting, and of course an award-winning comedian as well, so it's going to be loads of fun. You can get tickets by going to cheerfulearful.co.uk. We've also got the link up on our Twitter and Instagram at DixPod, and in the description of this podcast somewhere as well. Or you can even just turn up and buy tickets on the door, I believe. I think there's still a few left. I mean, there's only a couple of days to go. This is going to go out late on Tuesday night. So, yeah, not long to get tickets. But, yeah, if you haven't managed to, I reckon you can still get them on the door. And it'd be lovely to meet you. Hopefully, I'll be able to speak properly then. My family have had the lurgy and I'm sort of the last one to get it, so I'm hoping it sort of passes through my system before then. But look, I'm going to soldier on regardless, as long as I can actually speak. So I'm going to save my voice now, let you listen to Lauren Patterson on Desert Island Dicks, and I'll be back at the end for a tiny bit more waffle. And that's it. Here we go. Hi, I'm Dan Benedictus and welcome to Desert Island Dicks, the show that sees you marooned on a desert island after a plane crash with the worst people and worst things imaginable. Who they are and why they're a dick is up to our guest, and here to share their Desert Island Dicks with us today is comedian, actor, podcaster and writer Lauren Patterson. How are you doing?
Hello, I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
I'm all right, yeah. You know, typical average Wednesday mood, I think. But yeah, I'm doing all right. How are you feeling today on this average day?
I'm feeling pretty calm. It's not raining, which is a relief. I feel like it's been quite biblical. Heaven's opened the last few days, and it means every time I try and take the dog out, he looks at me like I'm a piece of shit, and I'm like, I don't want to be outside either. But this is what we have to do. But it's quite a nice day today.
Okay, so feeling sort of fairly upbeat. I mean, you know, we're about to sort of deal with the worst people and things that you can imagine to
yes.
be stuck with. Is this a daunting task for you? Do you find it like something that you relish?
I found it probably too easy.
Right.
Okay. As soon as we were like, can you think of three people? I was like, I can think of more. So many more.
That's the thing. I feel like sometimes I should ask people back on like a year later to, you know, do you want to stay with those people or add more, you know?
Exactly.
Okay, well, look, let's dive in and we'll see who you did narrow it down to. Who's going to be the first person joining you on the island?
The first person joining me on the island. This is maybe a little bit generic, but I can also picture this person. I've met them many times. So I have worked in, well, I don't do it now, but worked in hospitality for a long time. Mm-hmm. So I've been a waitress. And the first person who came to mind would be the person who complains about the food after you've checked back and they've said everything's fine and after they've eaten the entire meal.
Yeah, yeah.
No. Oh my God, it used to wind me up so much. Because especially, you'd stand there and they've got a clean, empty, clear plate in front of them and you'd be like, oh, is everything all right with your meal? Well, actually. And I'd stand there and think, well, you've eaten it,
yeah.
So it can't be that bad. And also, what do you want me to do now you've eaten it? Like,
yeah, I've come here, I've paid for food, I've eaten all of the food, I'd like a discount, please.
Exactly, exactly. It used to frustrate me, and I was so shit hot on making sure I went and checked back on people and was like, are you okay? Everything. And loads of people I've seen before being like, oh, do waiters deliberately wait till you've got a big bit of food? And yes, yes, we do. Or I did, at least. Wait till they've got biggest mouthful of food, but I would make sure I asked everybody, look, is everything all right? This is your window. I am granting you a window of complaint. No, everything's fine. And oh, I would feel my blood boil because you know, you're not daft. I'm like, you're doing this to try and get something off, money off to get. And I mean, we all love a bargain, we all love a discount, but why are you being so, it's just difficult.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I feel like, well, I've been in situations where I remember actually it was someone in the group of people I was with, the waiter came round and this guy started critiquing the food back to him. Like, he thought it was fine, but it was a bit under seasoned. And he was going, you know, I think it just needs a little lift, you know, maybe something like this, like a bit of citrus or something. And it's like, look, like, you send it back when you physically can't eat it, or it's
can't
really
eat it.
Disgusting, or if like the wine is corked and fucked, you know, like, if it's fine but you just don't like it that much, that's a different thing. Like, if it's, you know, it's been cooked, you don't like the taste but it's not bad, then I think you don't really have a leg to stand on. I think just shut up.
Nah, I always remember somebody sending back her salad, and I think, to be fair, she'd got the wrong salad, so I was like, that's totally fair. And I took it back to the kitchen, and anyone who's ever had to work with chefs will know chefs are brilliant, hard-working people, but oh my God, they are difficult to work with. They work to their schedule. They know what they're doing. And in comes me, little 21, 22, however old I was at the time, and I was like, oh, this person's had the wrong salad, so they need a new one. And you just get ignored, and you're like, no, please, can someone listen to me? Like, I appreciate you're all really busy, but this needs bumping to the top. And they ignored me for so long, to the point where I could feel the woman's eyes. It was one of these, like, open, so she could see into the kitchen. I could feel her eyes on us. And I went over, and she was like, can you not just do it yourself? And I was like, I completely appreciate it's just a salad, but I am 21. Yeah. You do not want me anywhere near your food. Absolutely.
How do you think it's going to go down if the chefs aren't even going to acknowledge my existence? How do you think they're going to react to me stepping into their world and going
absolutely.
In the kitchen?
Absolutely. Oh, I pictured it being like, you know, something out of a Western when somebody walks into the saloon doors and they all just turn. That's what it would have been like. Yeah. They would have been like, hey, why is she entering our sacred space? And I think difficult customers in general are the bit I judge people very harshly on, how they treat, like, shop workers, waiters, taxi drivers. I really, really judge people who treat people, like, awful. But, just difficult customers. But the food one gets us the most, because I'm like, you ate it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's weird. I mean, I think working in hospitality is really hard. Like, I've done like tiny little bits and pieces here and there, but I've never had like a proper stint in it. We're all familiar with these sort of annoying people, and I think sometimes people sort of almost do it so that they've got almost sort of makes them look discerning. Do you know what I mean?
Yes,
it's sort of like,
yeah.
Oh, well, actually, I found mine a bit. It's like, come on, like, it's fine. We're not, you know, what are you expecting from the sort of place we're in? It's like, you know, there's levels of it as well. It's like, if you go somewhere really high end, it's your birthday, you're paying loads of money, you know,
exactly.
It's got to be perfect. If it's just like your local cafe, then like, give them a fucking break.
Oh, definitely. I used to work in a supermarket cafe, and it's the closest I think I've ever been to just having a complete breakdown at work, because I wasn't really like properly trained. You know, you're sort of picking things up as you go along, and obviously I was making a lot of like fry-ups, which isn't hard, but it's timing. It's getting everything ready at the same time and all that kind of stuff. And the thing I found hardest, right, was the eggs. I don't know if anyone's worked in a supermarket cafe, but you basically have, like, a hot plate almost thing. Mm-hmm. You crack the egg onto it and it cooks on there. And you can, like, flip it or whatever. And I just could not, for the life of me, do an egg, like, really well. And I remember one day thinking, right, I've smashed it finally, like, got it perfect. Like, often they would split and stuff when you flip them. I was looking at the most beautiful egg I've ever seen in my life, and I was like, well done, Lauren. The girl took it to the customer, and he sent it back because the egg was too runny. And I thought, but I like a runny egg. Yeah. Like, that's, I've kind of cooked it how I would have it, like a runny egg. And I thought, fair enough, I'm still learning. Maybe do your eggs a bit, like, tougher. Because some of the other girls would flip them so they're, like, sealed on the other side. I was like, right, I've got the knack now. I'm going to do it. So, you know, next breakfast comes on. I was the one plating up all the food. I was like, brilliant. Put the egg on. Just sent it back because it was too hard. And then you just think, am I being punked here? Is this...
Yeah.
I felt like I was living in an episode of Goldilocks. I was like, right, okay, so that egg was too runny, this egg is too hard. And I felt like saying at the end of the day, we are in a supermarket cafe. I don't think you can have too many preferences of exactly how you would like your yolk cooked.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God.
Yeah, it's not really the place to sort of get all... Like...
Exactly. I once had a woman ask him, so I was on the till, like, taking the orders, and she asked if she could have the fat cut off her bacon. And I thought... Do it yourself.
Yeah, just cut the fat off. It's much easier once it's cooked anyway.
Exactly. I was like, surely that's an easier job for you to do. And I do think working in restaurants, in supermarket cafes, has really made me a lot more of a considerate diner. I used to be a very, very fussy eater. And now I'm just like, if I can pick it off myself, I'll pick it off myself. And as long as it's not going to kill us, just eat it. It's fine.
Yeah. I think there's something as well about... Like, things that you could really easily do yourself if you were at home, and you know it's going to take more time. Like, having the fat cut off your bacon, it's like, well, it's there. I could just do it now and eat it, and then otherwise
exactly.
I've got to wait, like, maybe a minute for them to send it back. I've got to get their attention. They've got to send it back. Hope they don't spit in my food because I'm being annoying.
Yeah.
You know, it's just... And just dealing with someone like that on an island, you're together in a desert island after a plane crash, and it's like...
Oh,
just somebody's just a bit picky, and it's like, it's not important right now. Come
exactly.
on, bigger picture. Just have your fry up and do your shopping.
Can you imagine? Be like, oh, my fresh fish isn't actually cooked properly. We're on an island. Mm. Of course it's not going to be cooked properly. We've got a fire and optimism. That's all we've got.
I think it's a really strong start. Who's going to be the second person joining you?
Ticket touts.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if this is a sign of... I know I'm not old, but I'm aware I'm getting older. And I've become increasingly infuriated by ticket touts. And I was trying to buy tickets on pre-sale for somebody the other week and couldn't get them. Tried on the general release, couldn't get them. And then you look at the ticket touts, and this is how I know I'm becoming my dad. I was like, they're just making it impossible for the real fans to get hold of tickets. And as it came out my mouth, I was like, you're still in your 20s. Who is this person? This is not... But I find ticket touts deplorable.
Mm.
Like, genuinely, I don't know how they do it. I don't know what their tactics are. I don't know if it's, like, some kind of conspiracy and all the ticket companies are actually working, like, in cahoots, but they wind me up so much. Trying to get tickets for something now, only to find out you've been beaten by, like, a robot is infuriating.
Yeah,
infuriating.
Because I guess now there is sort of software and stuff that they can probably do it, but, you know, like, when I used to go out years ago, I mean... Like, I'm 40 now, but before the internet was, like, a big thing, you'd still get ticket touts, and it was like, how did you...
Yeah.
I couldn't get them in time, and I was there when they went
exactly.
on sale, so how the fuck are you doing it? Like, is this a big plot or something? I remember once going to a show, and I think one person with us had, like, just decided to tag along and see if they could get a ticket or something, but everyone else had tickets, and this tout came up to us, and my mate said, oh no, it's all right, I got mine off eBay or something, because it was, like, early days of things like it'd only just become a thing where you could, like, buy reselling tickets online and stuff.
Yeah.
And this ticket tout got really angry. He was like, oh man, eBay, bunch of crooks, they should all be locked up. And you're like, you know, this is the same thing you're doing, like, it's the
same
thing. Yeah. I'd sort of... This just shows how long it's been since I've been to a gig. Like, I mean, I forgot they existed.
Absolutely. And I think because with doing comedy, a lot of the things I buy tickets for are comedy. So no disrespect to comedians, not exactly hard to get hold of. Like, even if a comedian's doing like a big venue like the arena, they don't sell out like in a heartbeat. And twice in the last couple of weeks I've tried to get tickets for like someone musicy. And it's just been like, you know, like total wipeout. I feel like I'm having to do this whole obstacle course. Today it was I'm tried and failed on two websites, and I was like, no way have these sold out in 60 seconds. I managed to get some on the third website I tried, but then it gave me like 4 seconds to put my card details in, and we can see the countdown going down, and I was like, I've only just woke up, I can't type this fast. And all I could think was, how is a robot, well, I know how a robot is doing it faster than me because they're more competent, but infuriating.
But they've always had a way of getting them. Before there were apps and like cheats and like robots and computer things. God, I sound so old today. I really, you know. But before there was sort of electronically managed ways of getting tickets quicker, it was still really hard to get them, and I don't know how they do it. And again, like putting this person onto the island with you, that kind of cunning and sort of like, you know...
You couldn't trust them.
No, not at all. And you'd be thinking, God, do you know what? I'm sure that there should be a load of coconuts ripened today, because yesterday there were loads that were just about to be ready, and suddenly you're like, oh, what, you've got some, have you? Oh, how much do you want for them? Oh, bloody hell, like, now I've got to go and find a load of shells.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think it would be a really difficult thing to deal with. And also, it's one of those things where you're like, you know, certain dodgy enterprises that don't even seem that easy. It's like, it still seems like quite a lot of effort and work.
Yeah.
It's not like just free money.
You know.
You might as well just do anything else. It can't be that easy.
Yeah. I hadn't realised just what an ordeal it was. Like, I tried to get some for something today and I thought, I've had to set an alarm. I've had to get up early. I've had to have multiple tabs open. I've had to have my... The level of organisation that has to go into it. And I'm like, now imagine if you're someone who's a tout and is trying to buy like 100 tickets. Like, I mean... Although maybe it would be useful to have someone who is clearly such a criminal mastermind on board.
Yeah, so, right, we've got a complainy person in the service industry, and then we've got a ticket tout, and I feel like they're probably going to bang up against each other a bit. I feel like the complainy person probably won't like the ticket tout that much as well. So already you've got a bit of friction there.
Absolutely. Like, I can just imagine the drama that would unfold, because I think if you've got someone who is quite whingy... And then someone who is quite sneaky.
Yeah.
They're going to rub each other up the wrong way, 100%. 100%.
Because I think the whingy person would be quite sort of play by the rules, like, you know, straight down the line kind of thing. So,
yes. Yeah.
And you'd even want to team up with them against the tout, because they're a pain in the ass, basically. So
that's the thing, yeah. I'd feel like I'd want to sort of form some kind of allegiance against the whingy person. But then I couldn't get into bed with a ticket tout. I couldn't.
No. Okay, well, let's see who the third person is and how they're going to fit into this mess.
Okay, my third person is, I'm a very big advocate of the quiet coach on the train. As someone who has to, like, travel a lot for gigs, I always think it's better to sit in the quiet coach, because I'm like, especially if I'm traveling on a weekend, I don't want to, like, police other people's night out. So I'm like, yep, cool, you sit and you have your drinks and you be loud and you be a hen party, a stag party, whatever. But I want a little sacred space where I can travel from Newcastle to Liverpool or wherever in silence. I love a bit of silence on the way to a gig. I like to get my head clear. And probably one of the most irritating people in life are people who come and sit in the quiet coach and just talk either really loudly to whoever they're with, or they'll talk on the phone, or they'll bring a kid and they'll, like, give the kid something to play with without headphones. Anyone who disrupts my sacred space of the quiet coach is my worst nightmare. So annoying. So annoying. Like, I can feel my heart. Whenever I see someone with a kid get on, I'm like, I'm not going to judge you just because you've got a kid. Maybe your kid wants a bit of peace and quiet as well. And then the iPad comes out and then it's full volume. And I'm like, oh, this is torture. Torture. It really stresses me out a lot.
I mean, as someone with two kids, the idea of me being with my kids in a quiet coach is stressful to me, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's what I always find bizarre. When I see someone get on the quiet coach with kids, I'm like, surely you mustn't know that you've booked this coach. Because if I was ever travelling with, say, like my niece or my nephew, I would go in the loudest place possible so that their sheer chaos would just blend into everything else.
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, I've taken my oldest to the cinema a couple of times, and like, it's unbelievable how many times you have to tell him to keep the noise down.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, he's an excitable 5-year-old, and you're in a cinema full of excited 5-year-olds.
Exactly.
So it's kind of, you know, there's leeway. It's like, it's, you know, we're all watching a film at 9 a.m. So
yeah.
It's kind of, we all know the deal. But yeah, oh, it's like, as a parent, just having kids in quiet places is so stressful.
Oh,
so to
absolutely.
Sort of, to voluntarily go into that, I think, is insane. And for the rest of the people who are just ignoring it, I guess it's selfishness, isn't it? Or just sort of lack of awareness, which is increasingly just annoys the crap out of me. Like, you know, people just play music out loud on their phone anyway.
That's what
like,
gets me, yeah.
Even in a non-quiet coach, it's like, how have you arrived at this point where you think that we want to hear your music played badly through a tiny speaker?
Yeah.
I mean, I think life would actually be quite good if you could have that, if you were so unbothered, except it would make you an awful person.
Oh,
but like,
yeah.
To barrel through life like that must be so freeing. I mean, no anxiety.
Exactly.
Just like, you think everyone's having a great time because you're helping them enjoy this music.
Yeah, like if my phone accidentally plays like an advert out loud, I instantly want the ground to open up and swallow us. I'm like, oh my god, I'm so sorry, I have disrupted the peace. And I do kind of wish I had that confidence just to be like, you know what, everyone wants to hear my YouTube adverts. And it's like, no, please don't.
Yeah.
And I just find it very, as someone who sort of like finds travel quite stressful, like I don't find being a comedian, the most stressful part about being a comedian is the travel. Like, trains are delayed or cancelled or late, and you've got like some journeys take like 2 or 3 trains, and you're just like, oh, I just want a nice peaceful journey. And I just find it so entitled when someone just comes, fair enough if a train doesn't have a quiet coach, fair enough, I can't be the police of that, but when it does and someone comes in my little sacred space, I'm just like, oh, I just wanted to hear nothing. That's all I wanted. And I feel like on a desert island, that is the ideal place to get a bit of peace and quiet. And I think if someone with that mentality was on my peaceful desert island, they would not shut up. They'd be like, oh, isn't the sea lovely? And I'm like, oh, I've come to this corner of the island to get away from you. Yet you're here.
Yeah, well, I think also it's just the lack of awareness of all your needs or wants. Whether you're stressed or hungry or pissed off or tired or anything, it's just not going to matter to that person. Like, you could be there sobbing, just missing home and just desperately upset, and they just sort of give you a little punch on the arm. They're like, you're right. Like, not now. Just fuck off.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Read the room. Yeah. Read the room.
Exactly.
And I'm too awkward to like speak up as well, because I don't really like confrontation. But I was once on a train when somebody dared to challenge someone who was not obeying the rules of the quiet coach. And it was probably the greatest moment of my life. It was absolutely incredible. I think she might have even handed him headphones. She must have had like a spare pair or something.
Nice.
And I was like, what a baller move. Like, she was very nice about it. She wasn't like an arsehole. But I think she just sort of leaned over and was like, I'm really sorry, I don't know if you're aware, but you are in the quiet coach. People are travelling in this coach specifically for it to be a bit more peaceful. But I do have some spare headphones for you. And I thought, she's played that brilliantly, because he can't really say no, because he's going to look a dick. Like, if he goes, no, I don't want your headphones that you're offering me quite passively, aggressively, kindly. It's very, I aspire to be that woman. Yeah. I often think about her.
Yeah, and it's pretty ballsy. I think I have once, but then even, I think I was a bit drunk. And now thinking back to that, like, it just terrifies me that I'd even tried that. Like, now I can't even imagine myself doing it. But I think I was a bit tipsy and some guy was on FaceTime. And I was like, can you not just have a call? You can, I know if you're worried about not having enough credit, you can like FaceTime, just do a call. Like, you can just do an audio call. Just, what I'm saying is, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, please be quiet. I'm really bad for asking people to move out of my seat, you know, if someone's in your reserved seat.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And obviously, if the train's dead quiet, I'm like, it's not the end of the world, I'll go sit somewhere else. But if the train's really busy and there's nowhere else to sit, I get quite panicky, because I'm like, oh, well, technically that's my seat, but I don't want to ask them to move. I knew that I loved my boyfriend. Well, I knew I loved him before this, but this was one of those moments where you're like, yes, you're the one for me. We got on a really busy train. We had our reserved seats. Someone was sitting there and I instantly turned to him and went, oh God, someone sat in my seats. I was like, I really can't be bothered with the confrontation. He just strolled forwards with the confidence that I wish I had, very politely to these two women, went, I'm really sorry, but these are our seats. And they just got up and moved. And I stood, and you feel like, somewhere out of an officer and a gentleman where he picks her up, and that's what I felt like. And all he'd done was ask two people to move out of our seats, and I was like, I'm in love with you. This is incredible. Look at the confidence.
Nice. I wonder if there could be like an opposite coach of the quiet coach, where it's like not a party coach, but just a coach for like really unaware people. Because I wonder if they're also annoyed at other people. So you go into that coach and it's got thicker doors and stuff to isolate it from everywhere else.
Yes.
Everyone's playing music on their phones, eating smelly food, having loud conversations in each other's seats. And it's just like,
exactly,
you know, this wonderful, awful place that everyone can just get on board with. You know,
I agree. The free-for-all coach, that's what it should be.
Yeah, exactly.
Coach F for free-for-all, that's where you belong.
Well, until someone comes up and invents it, this sort of person is still very annoying, so I think they're a fair addition to your island. Okay.
Absolutely.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Now, mercifully, amongst the wreckage of the plane, there was some food and drink left over. Unfortunately for you, it's your least favourite food and drink in the world. What are they and why are they so bad?
Okay, my least favourite food, I don't know if this is controversial, onion, okay. Any kind of onion, brown onion, red onion, I've never liked it. I'm a child when it comes, I know I was just saying like literally 5 minutes ago, like, I'm not fussy anymore. But there's something about onion. If onion's in a recipe, I just leave it out. I'm like, nope. Like, if you order a burger from somewhere and it's got like a big, like, ring of raw onion on, I wouldn't ask them to take it out, but I'll pick it out. I can't stand it. I hate cheese and onion flavour. Like, I find it, I think it is more the texture of onion. Rather, if you chop it up teeny tiny small, I won't notice. Yep, that's fine. But any recipe that requests sort of like big slices or big chunks of onion, I'm like, either dice it small or don't put it in. I can't. It makes us want to gag. I hate it. I absolutely hate it.
I wonder if it's one of those things that, like, you know, some people just have, I mean, obviously it's a very strong flavour, so it does make sense.
Yeah.
But you know, some people have like a particularly strong reaction to it, because like, if you can't even have it cooked and stuff, because most dishes start with like, chop up an onion, don't they? Like, so
exactly.
Many things. And it's like, it's weird that society's evolved to a point where so much food has to begin at this point of like,
with
this
an
one
onion,
thing,
yeah.
Isn't it? I mean, yeah, I haven't really imagined what it must be like if you're at that point where
If it's chopped so small, I can't taste it. But we cooked something the other day and it was maybe not as little chunks, and only just get a bite of it. And I thought, this has now ruined the whole. I know I need to grow up. I know this is very much a me problem. I also get wound up about red onion in general, because I don't think it's red. It's purple. Why do they call it red onion?
That's fair, actually. Yeah, that's fair. I never really thought of
that. Maybe if it was a bit more honest about who it was, I would warm to it a bit more. I have progressed to the fact I can have a shallot.
Okay, yeah.
So I think that's a start, but they're a bit sweeter, aren't they?
I think so, yeah. I think it's different, like, being fussy is different to just not liking something, you know. I think it's fair enough, isn't it? And like, and also, we're just talking about this being the only food on the island, so I mean, that's a really shit thing to be left with.
I was going to say, that's a pretty bad place to start.
Like, just having to eat an onion. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. My friend at uni used to often, like, he'd come in and he'd go, oh, I'm really hungry. Can I make myself a sandwich? And you go, oh, I haven't really got anything. And he'd go, oh, it's all right, I'll just make an onion sandwich. And he'd just have butter and onion.
Oh.
And, like, I don't mind having onion in size sandwiches. Like, I quite like strong tastes and stuff like that. But it was just something so bleak about this, like, just onion sandwich. And it was
the sole ingredient.
Yeah, and it wasn't like mild onion. You know, it's like big, strong cooking onions and
yeah.
So yeah, I mean, thinking about that, I can understand why Well, yeah, that would be a really shit thing to be stuck with on your own.
Oh, mind, even, like, I quite like butter. So I love, like, slice of bread with a big wadge of butter on it. But I remember doing food tech in secondary school and watching someone in the class just go around licking all the, like, when you had the butter on the greaseproof paper. Oof. The teacher had obviously measured it out for everyone, and she was, like, licking the remnants of the butter off. And I thought, that's wow, too far for me.
Yeah,
that is,
I mean,
too far.
You know, if it was like the end of the Second World War, you know, that was happening, then like, yeah, maybe, okay, yeah, fine, it's a luxury now. But yeah, I think in these days, there's really no excuse for licking butter.
Can't think, like, the worst meal deal possible would be an onion sandwich, cheese and onion crisps, and then my drink, sparkling water.
Great.
Vile.
Yes.
Vile.
I am so on board with you for this, because
I can't stand it.
Do you know what? So when this podcast was originally started, it was started by my friend James. He was the original host. When he was working out the idea, I was the very first guest, and my drink choice was sparkling water. So you found a kindred spirit.
Oh, I just think it tastes like soapy almost.
Yeah.
Like, it's so unpleasant. I think there's nothing worse than when you see a glass of clear liquid and you think, oh, someone's had a glass of water, I'll have a little sip, and then it's just bubbly, but not even fizzy. Like, I love a fizzy drink, absolutely love a fizzy drink, but there's something about sparkling water. My boyfriend loves it. My boyfriend has, like, a 2-litre bottle of it in his car at all times, like his emergency sparkling water. I think it's vile. Absolutely vile.
Yeah, and it's so hard to, like, people say it's more refreshing, but it's sort of like, it's sharp, isn't it? I feel this again is something where, like, people who like it just go, but it's just water with bubbles in, I don't get it. This is such a boring thing to say, but water is, like, my favourite soft drink. Like, I drink a lot of water. It's always just what I'm in the mood for, like, big glass of cold water. And when it's, like, fizzy, it's like, no, but this doesn't just taste with, it's not the same with bubbles. There's, like,
exactly,
a sort of weird bitterness to it or something.
That's the thing, it's the bitterness. Like, you drink it and it has this aftertaste, but it's not an aftertaste because it's the actual taste. I'm just like, oh, I find it so unpleasant, and it makes going out for food with him very difficult, because I know he would love nothing more than a bottle of sparkling water for the table, and I'm just like, please don't make me suffer.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if I'm out and people order sparkling water, I'm just getting dehydrated. That's just how it's going down.
It's the kind of drink where, like, you feel like you need to, like, towel your tongue down after. Do you know what I mean? Like, oh, it's like licking a carpet. That's what I find drinking sparkling water. And if that's all I had on that island, oh, I ain't lasting long.
Yeah, because it's so close to something refreshing and good and life-sustaining.
Yeah.
My wife used to hate it as well. And then just a few years ago, I was like, you bought a sparkling water by mistake. And she was like, no, I like it now. And it's like, what? Sorry, darling. What the fuck is going on here? Like, when did this happen?
Are you?
Yeah, like, are you having an affair? Like, because this is quite a big change, you know.
Exactly.
So I think it's a very, very good choice on the island.
I remember when I first started, like, drinking, and, you know, when you're trying to, like, when you're 18 or 17 or whatever, and you're trying to find which drinks you like, and I remember someone buying me a gin and tonic on a night out, and I was like, ugh, wah, vile, I obviously don't like gin. Thought for years I didn't like gin, until I made the right realisation, it's the tonic I don't like. And I think it's that very similar kind of thing to, like, it gives me the same sort of effect as, like, sparkling water. So I would always have a gin and lemonade, and then everyone would take the piss and say I was a proper hun because I'm having, like, a gin and lemonade. I was like, let me be a hun if I want to be a hun. That is absolutely fine.
Fair enough. All right, well, sparkling water is going to join you on the island. Now, fortunately, you won't be without entertainment on the island. The plane's entertainment system continues to work, but just your luck, it only has two working settings. One is your least favourite film of all time, and the other is your least favourite song. What are they and why?
My least favourite film is Transformers.
Okay, yeah.
The entire franchise. I don't understand how there are so many, like, amazing stories waiting to be told. And I'm really obsessed with, like, The Blacklist as well in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. You know, is it the films that don't get made that year, but, like, should have been made or whatever, and then some of them get made, like, years later. You sometimes see some of these films that have been on the blacklist or whatever, and then they get made, like, years later, and I think, how did it take you that long to get made? And there's been, like, what, 6 Transformers? 7 so many Transformers. It's just, it's everything I hate in a film. It absolutely, if someone said to me, can you imagine your worst film? I'd be like, it exists. It's Transformers. I'm not a big fan of robots. And I but tell you who would get on with the Transformers film, the ticket tout.
Yeah.
They'd be like, they'd be in cahoots.
They've probably been to the premiere because they got themselves tickets somehow.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, really don't like Transformers.
I grew up with the Transformers, you know, the original animated thing. That was my favourite cartoon when I was a little boy, and I had the Transformers. Now my son likes the Transformers as well. But when the first one came out, and I was kind of thinking, oh, you know, a few of my friends from a similar era were like, oh, right, maybe this will be quite exciting, like relive our youth. And we all thought it was shit as well.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know why, it's just, I'm just so not interested. And I think something about special effects films, like when I was young, special effects like were still not amazing, so that when they were good, you go, oh my God, the effects in this film.
Exactly.
I think for a long time now, special effects have been so good and so seamless that it doesn't even matter anymore. Like the last 15 years, it's like, who cares? Like you can't even say the special effects are good because it's a given that they're going to be good because it's the year 2022 and we've got green screens and everything. Like they're always pretty seamless. Occasionally, you know, you'd watch like a Pixar film and be like, bloody hell, that looks real now.
Yes,
but even that, it's not like it looked shit before. So like, and they're still really long. What's going on? Like, I just don't care.
I think that's the thing for me as well. I don't like a long I shouldn't have to pause a film for like a refresh, for a break, for a pep talk to get through the rest of the rest of the film.
Yeah.
Mind, I did get to the end of it. There's only one film I've nearly walked out of ever, and that was Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Oh, okay.
Only film I've nearly walked. And again, I think that was quite long. I wasn't interested, but it did get good at the end. So that was nearly going to be my film. But I was like, you know what? I did actually enjoy the last half hour, whereas Transformers, no.
Fair enough.
Eternal hell.
It's weird because these things are like, you know, it starts off as like a silly cartoon for young children.
Yeah.
But then by the time you've made it into a blockbuster, it has to then be a bit serious because they can't make it. They've got to appeal to as broad an audience as possible. So they can't make it silly and ridiculous.
I think that's what I find quite jarring about it. I'm like, essentially, this is a kid's thing, like a kid's toy and a kid's cartoon. Mm. And you've sort of like amped it up to this real like high stakes, quite actiony. Yeah. And I'm like, imagine if when the new Barbie film comes out, it's like some kind of proper thriller, deep feminism film.
Yeah, it's like the backstory, like how she became this character. I think Transformers would be much better if it was just a kid's film made by Pixar or whoever, and then you could, as an adult, could enjoy it like that. But yeah, to make it serious, it's like, come on, fuck off. Like, there are other films waiting to be made. You said, you know, there shouldn't be that many of them. You know, there should be a limit. And what would your song choice be?
My song choice is Mr. Blobby.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, of course.
Because that was number one when I was born. So I'm quite fascinated by things like that. Like, oh, what song was number one, like when you were a kid, when you were born and stuff. And number one when I was born, Christmas 1993, is Mr. Blobby. And I'm like, what a shit song to have as your... Oh, this was number one when I was born. And now I feel like almost my entire life is defined by Mr. Blobby.
Like, you know, in Chinese astrology, you're like born under a certain star sign. Imagine if it had that much effect. You're like, oh God, our little girl, she's born under Mr. Blobby's era. I mean, the one thing I will say as someone who lived through that era, at least you didn't have to experience it. I mean,
that's the thing. I only have very, very vague memories of Noel Edmonds' house party, but very, very vague, almost like a fever dream.
Yeah.
And yes, I think at least I think, because when you think about it, very creepy.
Oh, horrendously very creepy. Yeah, even at the time, he was quite polarizing, you know.
Yeah.
The weird thing is, when something like that happens, you kind of think, okay, look, we've had a laugh on Saturday night. We've seen Mr. Blobby causing havoc yet again.
Yeah.
You know, pranking someone or whatever. But you've gone out and you've bought that. You're going to play it in your own time in your house. And you'd be in the car and they're doing the chart show and then they have to play it because it's number one. It's like, you're in the car going, what the fucking hell? Like, this is so mad. You could be at work and it would come on. And, what's going on?
Exactly. And especially Christmas as well. Like, I grew up when, you know, Christmas number one was like a big thing. And I just think, why as a nation did we allow that to happen? Why? Nothing to me screams Christmas less. Like a pink and yellow... Is he an alien? I don't even know what he is. A blob?
I guess so. I don't know if they ever had an origin story. Maybe that would be the next thing. Like, yeah. Hollywood loves an origin story, don't they? Like,
that'll be the next Transformers film. It'll be like Mr. Blobby's origin story. But it's one of those songs as well that is just bad.
Yeah.
Like, and it's on a loop and torturous. I wish I had a cool song being number one on my birthday, or like a meaningful song.
Yeah, and it's great to think of yourself trapped on an island with that as the backdrop. I mean, it's such a going mad on an island song, isn't it? I love those sort of those choices from guests when it's, you can just imagine you just in just a total emotional wreck with Mr. Blobby playing in the background. It's horrendous. I mean, I've got it stuck in my head now.
I was going to say, it's one of those that's very easy to get like wedged into your head as well. Mm. And it's got that quite like sinister undertone to it, which... Oh.
Yeah, there was something sinister. He wasn't just an annoying figure. It was like there's something weird going on. Like the sort of processing on his voice was really like sort of semi-robotic, isn't it? It's like... Okay, well, look, I think we need to move on swiftly just to try and distract ourselves from the songs in our head, but it's a very fine choice. But finally, the island is overrun by the biggest dick of all the animals. Which animal is it and why?
Absolutely, a hairless cat.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I do think you fall into two camps. You're either a cat person or a dog person. I'm firmly a dog person, so I'm not massively a cat lover anyway. But there's something about a hairless cat where I'm like... You know, I do say it's unfair just to say I don't. Hashtag not all cats. I do like some cats. Like, I've had friends who've had cats, and I like when they come sit on your knee and you stroke them, and you know, they do the little knead and the biscuits thing on your leg. But then you have a hairless cat, and I'm like, not only are you a cat, which is fundamentally worse than a dog, but you don't even have the redeeming quality of having hair.
Yeah.
Do you stroke a hairless cat?
I guess you do, but like.
What does it feel like?
I don't know. I mean, I've got a cat and he's really got really lovely thick fur. And, and he's really, like, he's, you know, well, I don't mind if people don't like cats. It's fine. Like, I get that they are dicks. But, like, you know, he's so nice and soft. But the idea of just skin is, like, the only thing I can imagine it might be like is, like, you know, some dogs, like, I used to know somebody had a sausage dog.
And,
his tummy was kind of a bit bald.
Oh, I know what you mean. Yeah, yeah.
And you know, it's like, and it's something about that, like, hot skin.
Hot, fleshy, yeah.
I found it really horrible. Like, the rest of him was like a nice velvety coat. But there was something, he was sitting on my lap, and I was like, you know, you don't offend anyone, like, slagging off their dog. But I was like, it was like, you know, when you're cooking a chicken, like, chicken, cold chicken skin, but then you heat that, like, that warm. And I imagine that's what the whole cat must be like that. It's
exactly. All I can imagine is, you know, like, when you see, like, sort of a bald man, like, that bit in between their head and their neck, and it's, like, a bit of a sort of, like, almost like a fold of skin. I'm like, is that what it's like? But...
Maybe.
Yeah, like, say if someone said to me, oh, we want to get a cat. Like, say if my boyfriend said, I want to get a cat. I wouldn't be furious. I'd be like, yeah, whatever. Like, fluffy, cuddly, okay. But just a hairless, I find them quite menacing.
The shape of their faces is very sort of, like, aggressive, pointy-looking as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. And I think cats, deep down, are out to get us. I think they're waiting for their moment to take over. So I think if I was on a desert island surrounded by hairless cats, I would just accept that these people rule my life now. I bow down to my hairless cat overlords.
They would definitely be a scary animal to wake up to.
Yeah.
Like, if you just woke up and there was just a few of them just staring at you or something. And yeah, even if they were friendly ones, just it's not something to cuddle up with. It's like...
Exactly.
I'm curious as to what they feel like, but if you feel anything like that dog's stomach, I just don't want to know.
I had never really thought about it. I knew they sort of like creeped us out a bit to look at, but it was when you were on about like, oh, like pick an animal, and I googled hairless cats, and the first thing that came up on Google was it would put a 3D one in my living room. You know, like some kind of feature. It was like, do you want to see a hairless cat? And I was like, absolutely not. Don't put one in my living room. And then I started to think about, well, hang on, what would one feel like? And especially on the desert island where it's hot. And I was like, will it be sweaty?
Oh, God, yeah, like a sweating hairless cat.
Exactly. Because even my dog, when my dog gets hot, like even his hair feels a bit like greasy, obviously. But you're like, well, whatever, you're a dog in a fur coat in the summer. But then if it's a hairless cat, and if it is just that, like, fleshy bit, do they sweat?
I don't know, yeah, because my cat doesn't... It's like fur rather than hair, isn't it? So it doesn't sort of get greasy, but Yeah, fuck knows what they're like. I don't know. I don't want to find out either. I mean, a bit of me is curious, but only a little bit. I'm happy to live in ignorance, I think. Lauren, you know what? It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you today. And you've picked a really good selection of people and things that will no doubt make your life a total nightmare on the island.
Absolutely.
So well done on that. Now, for those of us wanting to find out more about what you're up to at the minute, where's the best place to find out? You're doing a tour at the minute?
Yeah, I'm doing a little tour. So you can find me on at Lauren Patterson on Twitter, and I think I've got all the dates pinned on there, or I'm Lauren_Patterson on Instagram, and I imagine they'll be on there as well.
Lovely. Cool. Thank you very much. Well, it's been lovely to talk to you. Thank you for coming on Desert Island Dicks today.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
So there you go, that was Desert Island Dicks with Lauren Patterson, and thanks again to her for joining us. Now, I better get going because otherwise I'm going to use up what little voice I have, but I just wanted to say Desert Island Dicks is a Sync Clap production. It was dreamt up and produced by James Deacon, and is produced and hosted by me, Dan Benedictus. I edited it this time, but normally, often, if I can, I get Chris Attaway to do it because he's a much better editor than I am. And thanks, as always, to John Deacon, not the bass player from Queen, but James's dad, John Deacon, for his unwavering support, as well as to everyone else who supports us unwaveringly as well. We love it that you listen, and we're very grateful indeed. And having said how grateful I am, it seems bad to then ask you for something, but if you'd like to leave a rating or a review, then please do. It gives us a real boost, so it helps a lot. And thank you to those of you who have recently done just that, so it's very much appreciated. I've got to go because I can't speak anymore, but I will see some of you on Thursday night at the Bedford Pub in Balham for Desert Island Dicks Live with John Robbins, and the rest of you, I don't know when I'll see you, but you'll hear the live show when we finally put it out anyway. And that's it from me. Okay, bye.